having something that you're obsessed with for most YouTubers is something we all have in common. If you're not doing YouTube, what are you doing?
You, I think at your peak, had 15 million total audience. How did you pull off this exit?
Every day I worked really hard, and every day I saw, okay, what do I have that I've created value in that I can create more value from in the future? Most creative businesses today are still merch companies or clothing lines. That's not a good business to have.
Let's say like 5 years from now, what do you think you're working on?
So the goal is to funnel $1 billion within the next 8 years to creators.
Wow. Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. My name is Francis Zier, and today we're speaking with Casper Lee, formerly one of YouTube's biggest stars, who has semi-retired now and hasn't really been uploading videos for 6 or 7 years, but at his peak had 15 million followers across platforms. Today, he is an entrepreneur, the co-founder of an influencer marketing agency, a creator talent management firm, a student housing company, and Creator Ventures, which is a VC firm. Full disclosure, Creator Ventures was an early investor in Beehive, and Creator Spotlight is owned by Beehive. We had a great conversation about exiting as a creator and translating creator skills into entrepreneurship to build long-lasting businesses. I hope you enjoy. One topic that I haven't had the chance to talk to many people about is the idea of the exit for the creator, right? You, I think at your peak, had 15 million total audience, mostly on YouTube, but also cross platforms. Instagram, I think, is your second biggest. And you have kind of successfully left that behind. Now you are an entrepreneur much more than you're a creator. I think your most recent YouTube video was 2 years ago. You haven't really you've posted maybe 3 in the past 7 years. You've successfully exited. But my question is, like, when did you start planning that? Was this something that you were very consciously like, okay, I'm getting a little tired of being on camera and I need to engineer a future for myself? How did you pull off this exit?
I like calling it an exit. That's the first time someone's done that. Usually an exit involves being paid a bunch of money. But this exit, I guess, it wasn't planned. I mean, I kind of just took off a week, and that week turned into a few months and then a few years. Uh-huh. So that's what's strange, because basically I'd built this other couple of platforms that I felt could be where I could spend more of my time in life, which one was an influencer marketing agency called influencer.com. I'd co-founded that with a guy called Ben Jeffries. And then another one is called MVE. I'm still at both. They're not in hindsight. But they were both opportunities for me to not worry too much about stepping away, and then not only stepping away, but actually, as you say, exiting, or others call it quitting while they're ahead. So that's kind of, it was kind of a bit smoother than maybe it sounds in hindsight, where I've taken a big risk or I've announced a big goodbye. It was more smooth. I'm really happy that while I was a creator, I was always thinking about building other things that I could go and do when I wasn't a creator, not only from a financial point of view, but also just from like a meaning in life. Having something that you're obsessed with, I think for most YouTubers is something we all have in common. And if that's only YouTube, if you're not doing YouTube, what are you doing? So for me, I realized, YouTube was an obsession, but what I loved actually even more about YouTube was like collaborating and building things from scratch and convincing people to make videos with me. So being an entrepreneur is very similar. You collaborate with loads of people, either co-founders or teammates. You start things from scratch, you invent things, and you have to constantly spend time convincing people to do stuff with you. So there's a lot of leverage in entrepreneurship, and a very similar sort of leverage that you get in YouTube, where you're like, you get to a certain level, you can convince certain people at that level to collaborate with you, same in business.
Yeah. So a lot of things I want to come back to here, but one is the difference between a creator and an entrepreneur. I guess first we have to define creator, which is one of my favorite topics to do here. I ask less now, but I used to ask every guest, how do you define the term creator? Because you get different answers, right? I mean, the term originates with YouTube. I think in 2011, they start to call top YouTubers creators instead of YouTube users. Now, I won't tell you my definition yet. How do you define the term creator right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky one, and that is someone who creates content. I would push it to someone who creates content in a more democratized fashion than what we used to do in Hollywood and on television. But I think now you're even seeing those sorts of people coming over and becoming creators. So it can literally be someone who creates content to not even an audience. Could be just someone who creates content internally for a company. It could be someone who creates UGC. It could be someone who's a micro, macro. It could be a celebrity. So it's become a hugely vast group of people, which means when people say, what do creators like these days? Or can I do something
for creators?
It's almost
a useless question.
And it's like, yeah, it's like for most, yeah, most people who are trying to reach consumers are kind of creators.
So my
that was probably it.
No, that's perfect. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I've had to tune an answer when I started doing this that would guide, okay, who do I interview, right? Like, if this is Creator Spotlight, what defines the type of creator that I interview, which that has become somebody producing digital content for distribution on digital platforms who is growing an audience for that content beyond their friends and family and who is somehow monetizing it. But more broadly, it's just, that's, I like to definition. Say somebody who's contributing to the corpus of the internet, right? Which another way of putting that is like, in a previous marketing job, a manager of mine was like, look, Francis, we're just competing with anything anybody can look at on their phones. And so that's another way of defining a creator, is somebody who makes stuff that you look at on your phone, right?
Yeah. But then now that's being disrupted by YouTube becoming so prominent on TV.
On TVs, yeah.
It's literally... And then also creators now trying to do stuff in real life. And it's like, guys, what are we here? We're basically just humans who entertain.
Well, this is,
maybe that's
what
a creator is.
Yeah.
It's humans becoming, who entertain and teach and inspire. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
It's becoming kind of like, I think in 10 years, maybe sooner than that, but I feel like 10 to 15 years, it's just a word that like nobody uses because it's just implied, or everybody uses because it is everybody. When I asked you the exit question and you were like, well, it wasn't really planned so much. You had started influencer.com and you had started MVE management, right? Your talent management company. And because these weren't direct to consumer merch or product lines, right? Because they were not reliant on you being the face and like you selling something that had to do with your content, like that then set you up for an exit where you didn't have to like, you know, let's say you had started some brand where you're selling some product that is so reliant on your personality or whatever, it would have been much harder because you would have had to still keep producing the content as a marketing channel. So what you're sort of advocating for is like, yeah, that's fine, but that is going to make it much harder for you to turn off the camera.
It's a really interesting point. And then what's really hard is trying to build a really good company and have a really good YouTube channel.
Yeah.
I think it's easier with like TikTok and Instagram and short form content, but I think having a really good YouTube channel is hard to do while you're doing other good companies. I think, you know, you do get Mr. Beasts who seem to do both really well.
Yeah.
But you know, you need proper partners and co-founders if you're going to do both.
But even Mr. Beast, I understand that his media arm loses money. I think the last year's numbers, I believe it was, I don't have the exact numbers, but his media arm and his consumer goods arm, which has Feastables and such, like they both made a similar amount of revenue, but the consumer goods arm made a profit, whereas the media arm took a loss.
Yeah, I mean, and that could be a strategy to break even or lose money on that, or it's just really hard to focus on all of that all at once. And also, I guess the type of content he makes is just so ridiculously innovative that it's like, maybe it's not a well-trodden path to have a really profitable business that can create that level of production value and then distribute it on social media. Mm-hmm. He's in a whole new territory of media, and who are we to say that that should instantly be profitable? But the fact that he's built another business off the side that is where his profit center potentially will be is obviously smart. I just think it's a lot of, you know, creators who aren't focused on their channels and then do start a business, and the reason their business is successful is because of the channel. It goes into this like kind of negative spiral, which is really tough.
Yeah. Okay. So the businesses that you do have, as far as I know, you're the co-founder of four. I'll list them by the order of how long they've been active. I think influencer.com was the first. then MVE Management, and then you started Proper Living and Creator Ventures, I believe, around the same time. So am I missing any? And at the moment, which of these is consuming the most of your time?
Yeah. No, you're not missing any. I do some random shit on the side, but I...
One must.
I won't get into that. And I also sometimes play golf on weekends, but that's not a business. It's a loss-making enterprise. I spend a lot of time on all of them. Like, there's not like a particular day where I'm like, this is a day for that. But like, obviously, Influencer now has 180 people. That's a lot of kind of not only working with clients and all of that, but having a big team also comes with work in itself. And then the fund, it's myself and Sasha Kaletsky. We're actually super happy to say that we're early backers of Beehive. Mm-hmm. The cool thing about those two businesses, Influence, actually most of them, maybe besides the student accommodation,
is that it's a bit different category.
Like, yeah, exactly. They all kind of like give me things that help each other. Mm. And so like, for example, with Creator Ventures, the fact that I have such a close relationship with maybe the various social platforms because of influencer.com's relationships with like TikTok, Meta, YouTube, and so on, gives our portfolio companies access to those relationships. Or Influencer, being like a fast growth influencer marketing agency, learns so much from some of our like AI marketing companies we've invested in the fund, that I can then bring some of those thoughts back, or I can introduce them to founders that are like doing innovative stuff. So it's really cool. And then the same happens with like the talent management company. Mm-hmm. There'll be times where, like, there's a deal we did called Runner, which is like a running app that recently exited to Strava. And a few of our talent are running creators. And so we were able to work out very early on, like, this was a really sticky application for creator affiliate, because the running creators were getting really, they were getting well paid for their work talking about Runner. Mm-hmm. And Runner was getting really good business from them. And so like, when you see that happening, you're like, shit, that's some good insight that as a venture capitalist, like, is useful. So all of these things can kind of help each other, which I like. And it wasn't intentional. It wasn't like I created this whiteboard and I had this strategy, but it seemed to just kind of fall into place.
You didn't have the Walt Disney map of here's the empire, no. That famous thing.
But that's the thing. Maybe in hindsight, that's what people do. Once they I feel like you do a bunch of stuff, you see what works, and then you pretend you had it.
Then you write the memoir.
Exactly. I'm not there yet, but maybe one day.
I do want to get into the specific businesses. So first, influencer.com. Been around for about a decade. Obviously, the influencer marketing industry has changed a lot over that time. My like TLDR perspective, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that basically back then it was a little more Wild West. Brands didn't necessarily know what they were doing. They didn't know how to deal with creators or influencers. And money, the deals could vary a lot more because there weren't these norms. Whereas today, it's a little more calcified. There are these norms. Brands know what they should pay creators for X outcome, etc. Tell me about, like, say, the main differences from about a decade ago, about 5 years ago, to now. Like, what have been the major changes you've seen running this company?
Yeah, I mean, a decade ago was 2015. So, it was actually just starting out then to, like, I think, you know, PR companies were doing influencer marketing campaigns when they had a little bit of extra budget. Mm-hmm. There were some innovative things going on. Some brands were doing things. The next 5 years, you saw all of these companies, including ourselves, trying to find out who were the right customers to build these businesses for. And most of those became enterprise customers. So your kind of big name brands, you're like kind of your Googles, your Amazons, etc. And they were the main ones creators maybe were collaborating kind of 5 years ago. They still are. It's growing every single year. But then what's interesting about now is that you've got a lot more kind of startup companies coming into the mix trying to do influencer marketing too. Mm. So it went from like, it's kind of funny how, like, I feel like almost like the enterprise companies almost came into influencer marketing more seriously slightly before, maybe because the agencies that were starting convinced them to do it. And now you're just seeing like everyone doing it. And obviously the startups who are doing it well have really got proven models that, you know, that makes sense on paper. The CFO completely understands why this is a place they should be spending a lot of their marketing dollars. And then you're seeing the enterprises today now going, okay, we need to do the same thing. You're seeing, like, you know, CFOs of companies buying other companies and going, holy crap, your influencer marketing division's insane. Like, how is it so profitable? And they're educating each other. So ultimately, the market's getting smarter. And with that means, you know, as an agency, you know, your tech needs to be better. Your people need to be insane. You just got to work really, really hard. Because there's so many, with more money in the industry, there's more competition, there's more options. Mm-hmm. And people always go, does it feel like it's plateauing? Like, it doesn't really when you're in it, because I still think there's, like, so much momentum from, like, the big, big companies still just starting. You're seeing Unilever, like, saying that they're going to spend a lot more money here. Once someone like that says it, a lot of other people think about it. And it's definitely more momentum and more accountability is required because of that.
Mm-hmm. On either side, the brand side and the creator side, what would you say are, like, the main challenges you're having to help each party work through? I would imagine for brands, it's probably still, like, you have to give up a bit of control. That's part of why this works. And then for creators, I don't know what it would be, but yeah, from the brand side and the creator side, what are kind of the main challenges that your agency helps them mitigate and manage?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of similar things that I think the creator and brand struggle to be able to achieve. Like, the creator wants to be able to make really relevant content that their audiences like. And that's hard to do when you've got, you know, multiple parties involved. But not only that, when you're dealing with such a big brand that maybe can take time to make decisions, or they've already been sold on a particular creative. Mm-hmm. And then you as a creator think of a really cool idea. And it's like, well, no, you know, we've got this big creative that 100 creators are doing, and you're part of that. And we want you to make your own spin on it. But you're not, like, the center of this thing. And therefore, you have to, you know, you have to fit within this wider campaign.
And it's influencer.com's job to basically to make those two parties talk to each other and hear each other and understand.
Exactly. Like, well, and it's the fact that we have those relationships and expertise to, like, make it so that you can bring the stakeholders together in a better way through our technology and through, like, just the experience and knowing, like, these are the things we need to answer now so that we don't have issues down the line. And I think a lot of people just think it's like, maybe, oh, you call a brand and then you call a creator and then that's it. But there's so much, like, logistical communication. There's, like, product involved. There's so many things you can only know about if you've done a bunch of campaigns that we try and, like, get ahead of to try and make ourselves more nimble. So, like, we can be faster. Because if you can create content in a fast way, like creators know how to do, and they do organically well. Mm-hmm. And if you can do that for brands, you'll just have better results.
Do you think there's a difference between an influencer and a creator? This is another of these conversations I'd love to have.
Yeah. I mean, it's a funny one. Like, we have the name, our company is called Influencer. Mm-hmm. Like, we've got that name and our website is influencer.com. But we generally don't use the word influencer when describing creators. Mm-hmm. Because I think creator is just a nicer word to be called. I don't like it when someone says, oh, you're an influencer. I just think it sounds like I'm trying to be on a reality TV show like Love Island, which is fine. But I think creators, as we've talked about, are so much more, it's so much wider spread than that. It's not a particular type. If you're going to say the differences, I mean, an influencer is probably someone who has a lot of sway over what people think, whereas a creator might have to create really good content to convince people on something, if that makes sense.
No,
so you have some creators who are influencers, and then you have some creators who are just brilliant at making content. People come to us for both.
Yeah, my take on this is that maybe a decade ago when you guys were forming this company, influencer was a term people used. The word creator wasn't so widespread yet. And maybe that was the era where, you know, being reductive, but you could, like, do the, like, I've got the big audience, post a picture with a product on Instagram, and maybe that will do some sales. Or even if it doesn't do some sales, a brand is looking for that. Whereas I think now, it's just so much more competitive, and there's so many more people doing things that you need to be the creator. You need to be sophisticated as a producer of content. And influence is something you wield and something you can practice and something a brand can hire you to wield. But there's no, like, nobody is just an influencer. There are creators who can wield influence, and influence is kind of this noun and verb more than it is, like, a category of internet user.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I think It's also a lot harder just to be a quote-unquote pure influencer and live off that these days, because you've got to constantly convince the algorithm to feed your content.
Audiences and algorithms and companies are all too sophisticated for that.
Exactly. And so if you're just an influencer, that can last maybe a few months. But unless you're also a creator who can convince them to come back and care about them, then... obviously, there are some names out there I think will just be influencers no matter what they do. They're just famous. But we know who they are.
Hey, if you're enjoying this conversation, consider subscribing to the podcast. We release a new episode every Tuesday. All right, back to the show. I do want to talk now about Creator Ventures. So I'll give kind of my understanding of the abbreviated history. It started as sort of this investment club in 2019. You and your business partner and I believe cousin, Sasha Kaletsky, right? And so there was that original kind of investment club, smaller deals. You had some other creators and friends you were bringing in. There was that stage. And then I believe Fund One launched in 2022 with $20 million. And then Fund Two launched earlier this year in May with $45 million. And you've invested in companies like 11 Labs, like Beehive, who owns Creator Spotlight. And my understanding too with the name, I think this is an important distinction to make, because a few weeks ago, as we record, I interviewed Billy Parks, who is on Slow Ventures Creator Fund, which is about the similar size, actually. But you guys do different things. They invest in creator founders, whereas with you guys, the creator in the name is more a reference to your perspective and expertise rather than the type of company you invest in, correct?
Yeah. So we basically help our... portfolio with all things like social and marketing, and then we do a lot of other stuff that venture funds help founders do. Sasha has an incredible background in kind of both private equity and working at technology companies. And I think because we're called Creator Ventures, people think we just invest in creator economy startups. While we do that, it's mostly consumer kind of internet businesses that we invest in, because they're the ones who we think both are the biggest opportunity for returns, but also they really want support in social and creative, because that's how you build a consumer internet business today. And being an investor is all about getting access to the best deals, and to do that, you don't just do it with money. That's kind of a prerequisite.
It's relationships again.
Yeah, exactly. It's relationships, but also you do it with providing value once you've invested. And because the next time you make an investment, a reference call will definitely happen, and you want to be kind of the best investor on your portfolio's cap table. I spend a lot of my time, obviously, I spend a lot of time investing with Sasha, but I spend the majority of my time at the fund trying to help our founders kind of build go-to-markets, do their influencer marketing strategies, all that kind of stuff. And we've got this incredible network of people we've worked with in the past who we also like to introduce them to, who we know are like, these are your people you need for this, these are your people you need for that. Mm-hmm. And simple stuff like that is actually very useful.
Yeah. I wrote down this quote from the TechCrunch article when Fund 2 launched back in May. This is a quote from you. I'll read it out. A lot of consumer internet founders find that the real exciting go-to-market strategy is around social. A lot of these founders are becoming creators in their own right, and that's something I love to get involved in as someone who comes from that world. Which now, in the middle of this conversation, I'm thinking back at the beginning when you were talking about the exit, and what this is now is again, you having found a way to turn off the camera, so to speak, but continue sort of plying your trade in understanding how to put stuff out there on the internet and engage with audiences and play the algorithm game. And that now is the value you bring, no longer to the, to Casper on YouTube, but to any given company that you're investing in.
Yeah, no, it's so, I really enjoy it. And, it's cool that they want to be creators. Not all of them do. Some of them have to because they know it's going to be beneficial.
Yeah.
But I love to help them with that. And then it's obviously not only just them becoming creators, but that encompasses a lot of it. It's helping them build their whole team to be able to have a very sophisticated channel. So, I love it. And it definitely kind of scratches the creative itch that I enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. I'm like so lucky that I get to do these, you know, different roles that basically all existed because of something I fell into as a teenager. So all of this wasn't planned, but like, I don't know. It's almost like I just followed these paths. Every day I worked really hard, and every day I saw, okay, what do I have that I've created value in that I can create more value from in the future? Mm-hmm. That's kind of been the strategy.
Yeah. What defines a perfect investment opportunity for Creator Ventures?
Well, that's funny because we actually talk about this, like, because we invest in pre-seed and seed, like you never have a perfect opportunity. There's always something that's wrong.
Well, you're always betting on the jockey, not the horse at that stage, right? That, as the saying goes.
Yeah. There's sometimes, luckily with consumer, there's a bit of a horse sometimes, but like, I think some people ask us, like, we want the perfect TAM, we want the perfect founder, we want the perfect traction, we want the perfect team. And it's like, you need, if you don't compromise on anything, like, you're going to miss the good opportunities.
That's not what seed stage is.
Because it doesn't exist. And if it had all of that, it wouldn't be seed stage, or they might do some crazy, crazy seed.
They might not need your money if they already do all
that. Yeah, exactly. and so who cares what it's called? It's going to be super expensive, and you're going to pay for it one way or the other. So, but obviously, yeah, it's all the normal things. But I guess one thing we think is we can help a lot with like the marketing and like that side of things, whereas like the deep technical understanding or the deep domain expertise that they have is super important. I think like Tyler's a great example of someone who we saw.
Tyler Denk, Behive CEO for the listener.
Yeah, exactly. Who could both build like product, he could build tech, and he could convince the right team to help him do that. And then he also knows newsletters like better than anyone. And so we think that's a really good combination. And then he became an incredibly good marketer very, very quickly. So we didn't need to help him much with that. But like, that's something we think can be kind of more taught. Mm-hmm. And then I think we also like, you know, because we're not like a corporate venture fund, we're like just two people. We're able to make kind of contrarian bets on people where others might go, oh, well, you know, they're even from this country. That's not normal. We want everyone to be an SF, or there's this weird thing going on here with this structure. It's like, well, yeah, but let's look at like we're confident enough to make bets even when it all doesn't come together. Just like I said earlier, if it's going to be perfect, it's probably like too good to be true, or you're going to pay for it.
Yeah. Actually, the way you brought up Tyler here too, again, when I interviewed Billy Parks, and then something his colleague Megan Lightcap wrote in their newsletter afterwards, the difference between a founder and a creator founder, which they invest in the latter, and I think you guys invest more in the former, but I thought it was interesting. I wanted to share. So the way they defined it is basically the founder, who might look a bit like a creator, is more a Tyler. And they use Tyler in this example where he's building in public, he's putting out all this content, but he is not the crux of the content, the product is. Whereas with the creator founder, and the example of this was they just invested in this guy, Jonathan Katz-Moses, who's a woodworking creator, and his trade is in selling woodworking products, right? He kind of is the face of the brand, and the brand relies on his face. And this goes back to what we were talking about earlier and how your exit was able to work out so successfully, right? Because you kind of became more of the founder who was a creator rather than the creator founder. Mm. But I thought it was, I don't know if you have anything to say on that. I just thought it was like kind of an interesting way of look, an interesting investment thesis on like they invest in the people who are the face. But then again, you guys invest more in the people who are either able to market their brand themselves as a building in public founder or are willing to do that. And you help train them to do so.
Yeah. I mean, I think with, you know, their kind of the way they invest, I did speak to them and I think I understand it, but it's kind of like, it won't necessarily be a creator like I was who creates content about their own life. It will be probably a creator, as you say, someone who's doing something about woodwork or like, and also separately from what they're doing, there's a lot of these funds now who are investing in creator content, that they think is like more evergreen content. Mm. And so that relevancy becomes less of an issue because it's like, yeah, they are the, you know, they're the face, but the people are coming to this show because of an interest that could last for like 10 years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even if you watch a video 3 years later, it's still relevant. Whereas if you, you know, if you watch an influencer type creator, you want to see the latest thing. So I think that there's a lot of these funds now who are investing in that kind of content. And yeah, they got to be really careful not to invest in people where it's all about the person behind the screen. It needs so to be about risk, hopefully the topic itself.
Yeah. Another thing adjacent to all this is I've seen a couple, I think two businesses at least like this so far. And I've spoken to one guy, Jeff Frommer from OWM.AI. And the premise here is to connect businesses with creators and for creators to sort of get a stake in the business in exchange for promoting and for doing work instead of a traditional just cash-based brand deal. I wonder if you ever did that in your more creator-heavy days.
So I think cash is a great bartering tool. So sometimes I'm more of a fan of if you want equity in a business and you're going to post about the business, for the business to pay you, and then you invest in the business, or maybe you already invested in the business and then they're paying you to brand deals afterwards in cash. I know that may sound like less efficient because you're like, why do you need cash? Why don't you just do it direct for the... I just think sometimes with all the dynamics of funding and raising capital, when you're an investor and you hear like someone's getting some free equity, they're not an official team member and they're getting sweat. Obviously, that's very different when you're co-founding a business as a creator and you're getting a big piece because you're like, you're here for the next 5 years.
You have such a stake in it at that point. That
exactly.
You're going to stay up nights to promote it and such.
Yeah, but the idea of like, you know, having five creators who are ambassadors and maybe they have to post like for 6 months, you know, X amount of posts a year, and then they get some like certain equity at a weird valuation they don't fully understand. I kind of prefer just using cash as a tool. So I don't know that particular business itself. It might be doing it in a really smart way. I've just seen so many times where it gets too complicated for deals to get done. I'm like, why don't we just use this tool that already exists? and you can invest it the same. I also think like sometimes I've seen deals, maybe it's a slightly separate topic, but I've seen deals where like celebrities have wanted to invest in a company and that company's raised money and they can, you know, they already have reached their cap on what they're going to raise. Mm-hmm. And they're saying to the celebrity, we'll make some space for you. And then the celebrity goes, well, can I have like a lower valuation because I'm like a celebrity, or like, can I have some sweat equity to do this? And then the company like considers it, and then they go, okay, maybe not, because like we're not going to do a whole.
You
weird
can't
thing.
Play these sort of favorites.
And then all of a sudden, like for kind of 3 years later, that company goes on to sell, and then the celebrity is probably sitting there going like, why didn't I just spend some money to make a bunch of money? Like, and that's how we've always thought at like Creative Ventures is like. We're happy to pay. We're not here to haggle on every cent because like, especially in venture, you'd rather get into premium deals because you're providing value than get into sub-premium deals at a lower valuation because you're providing value.
Yeah. Okay. I want to pivot a little bit. This will be a bit of speculation, and it's a little bit outside, you know, getting away from like your investment thesis a bit. But one stat that I think about a lot ever since I learned this like 6 or 7 months ago, the number of full-time equivalent creators in the U.S. went from 200,000 in 2020 to about 1.5 million in 2024. Insane growth, right? Growth of the creator economy. There's more creators. There's more creators in different niches. There are more creator services businesses, whether that's a company like Beehive or whether that's an agency that's serving creators, whatever. When I see that quick expansion, right, I also wonder about the risks. And I think for me, one thing I think about a lot is this idea of growing and educating the middle class of creators. And I think that's a big part of my work in Creator Spotlight is to highlight these people, learn how they're succeeding, and also sort of spread business education and content production education to help these people succeed. So part of why, though, is I think as this population of creators balloons, then like there's more people with less education in how to succeed here. So I guess that was a lot. My question to you is how you think about that vulnerability, not necessarily just as like at Creative Ventures, because again, this isn't necessarily the kind of company that you guys always invest in, but as a former creator and an investor, I'm just curious your take on this.
Yeah, I think it goes to that, like the definition of creator is so wide now that when you're talking about this population, obviously I'm a creator, I care about creators, but it's just such a big group. So it's like,
yeah,
can you possibly put them into a bucket and be like, we need to educate this entire group. Because
this is somebody making digital courses and somebody with like a paid newsletter and somebody on Instagram who makes all the money through brand deals. It's so disparate.
Exactly. But one thing I think, you know, I just think this whole industry maybe gets... One thing I'd love to improve is like the reputation this kind of creators have as people. Mm. I think because of that influencer word, that I think also journalists in general maybe look at creators as like, especially in the past, they've kind of been, creators have been coming for their lunch a bit. So they've been like writing articles for like 10 years about, you know, making us seem a little bit like lazy or influencer like. And so there is this like reputation that creators are, you know, they get paid, they're all very wealthy. They don't work very hard and that kind of stuff. And I think that's just not the case when you consider the numbers. And as you say, like that kind of that middle layer. I think that's something that we as an industry hopefully can just improve on continuously. And I think young people growing up already know this because they now like look at creators as that rather than get told what creators are by media. But in terms of, you know, what creators need to succeed, I think it's just, you know, financial stability is super important. So platforms that can give creators that. So shout out again to Beehive, but like you can kind of own your audience on it. There's lots of other platforms that exist that can help creators monetize more. And I think there was this like back in, you know, the early 2010s, like I think audiences used to get kind of upset when creators were focused too much on monetization because it felt like, oh, weren't you just doing this because you love, you know, you love to create? But I think they're realizing again now, like you're providing value and it costs money to live and to make content at a level to compete today and to keep up, you need to be having a consistent income. Mm-hmm. So that's something the whole industry can work on, and I think it comes from both brands, comes from platforms like social platforms as well, and then it even comes from like audiences being prepared to support creators they love.
I think that the audiences aspect is a really good one. I just wanted to repeat, like, back then, 15 years ago, as you said, it's like, oh, I thought you were doing this for fun, like, what do you mean you want my money now, I don't owe you that. Whereas now people just know that, like, oh, I like this person's stuff. If I want it to continue to exist, I have to press like on this sponsored post or whatever it is, right? Yeah. There is more the understanding that this is commerce.
And I think, exactly. I think, you know, creators building teams has made a big difference. That just as soon as the audience knows there's more cost to create this content than back in my day when you could just stick up a camera, then it's like at least the audience knows that like their $10 isn't just being spent on pina coladas on holiday, you know. It's
Did you have actually, much of a team by the peak of your content career?
Not really, no. I had partners who would like help. I had a camera guy who used to edit as well, and then I had like a producer and stuff, but it wasn't like I built this like team of three or four ever. It was always one or two. So it's funny, as soon as I went from being a creator to then building a big team, I think, to be honest, I just love, like, when I came from a time when, like, for me, making content was, like, it was about filming it, and then it was about editing it, and then it was about uploading it, and I always enjoyed that ownership, and I struggled to, like, give that away, and I kind of wanted to leave it there.
Yeah. So what do you think about like kind of the YouTube meta now? Would you, if you were, you know, starting off again, do you think that's even something you would do, or would it be like a little turned off by how much more rigmarole is involved?
You know, I actually think YouTube is interesting right now because I can really see that when you make a good piece of content, it does get seen by an audience. I think they've learned from the TikTok algorithm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I was ever going to do it again, I would definitely not start on my own. I would, try get something that's, not just fully reliant on me. And it would probably be content that my own relevancy didn't matter. Hopefully it was good enough that if there was something going on in the world and we were talking about it, then it would get views because of that. So I'd love to do it around, like, business, entrepreneurship, but I don't have a plan just yet.
Yeah. So content for you now, I think you've still got, it's like 6.6 million or so on YouTube, 2.2 on Instagram, LinkedIn, you've got 50K. What is content creation to you now? You have the podcast with through influence.com, Voices of Influence. You do post on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram. It's a little more like,
yeah,
just kind of off the cuff personal stuff. Yeah. What is content to you now? And is there any audience that like gives you the most value these days?
Yeah. So you're right. For me, content right now is just like showing my life every now and then. And for some reason, my audience still like to keep up with it, which is fun. So yeah, I it's a mixture of like showing off what the portfolio is up to, what the talent I've signed are doing. I think there's this weird thing where maybe my audience is like, that weird YouTuber I used to watch now does all of these things in businesses like that I use.
Yeah.
And how is he involved in 11 Labs? Or he signed my favorite creator. Like, how has that happened? So I think it's almost just like confusion, and I love it. Where do I get the most value? I think it's from clients who I have maybe signed, and then like they or someone I'm speaking to, and then they go on to see a piece of content that I've done, and maybe it reminds them about us, or it makes them think, okay, we're going to do more. And so it's because the majority of the income, again, comes from B2B stuff. It's a very small group of people I'm trying to impress who follow me.
Which is especially on LinkedIn.
Exactly, which LinkedIn's great for, but I also find LinkedIn, like, I find it difficult because I just find some of the content on there is super kind of cringe.
The broetry, as they say.
It's really hard for me. Like, I feel like I need to say, these are 10 things I learned about podcasts, and then, like, put in something. I just can't do it. And I'm just, every now and then, I just don't understand LinkedIn. And I actually worked with them for a while, and they try to explain it to me, and I'm so bad at it. So don't come to me for LinkedIn advice.
I'm constantly trying to crack it. I swore I would never make a LinkedIn account. And then in 2018, I cracked when I was like trying in earnest to get better jobs. And now my posts can do all right. And more recently, I've been thinking that like the voice I try to bring to it is, there's a bit of that like earnest, that weirdly earnest LinkedIn tone. But I also try to think about it as, and so I think we're both born in 94, so we're the same age. Like back in like 2009, when I was posting on Facebook and I was a freshman in high school, like I'm kind of trying to think of it in that sense and like just post in earnest. Like back when it'd be like, it was like Francis Zier is blank and you started all your posts with is blah, 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 blah. Here's what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's cool.
So I think that's kind of like, what I like, that kind of weird earnesty, which is weird, but I think that's what's been working for me there recently, and what I see working for other people, besides the like, here's the lesson I learned and the 10 things I learned.
I'm gonna check out your account. It sounds like it's a better strategy.
It's okay.
I find these long posts with all these emojis and lines, they're getting very, very exhausting. And I find myself getting really angry and upset every time I come off it. Not because of the platform, it's the people on the platform, or sometimes just like, I also, it's when you, it's when you also sometimes know what's actually going on, and then you read someone's post and you're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, the artifice.
Anyway.
Okay.
It's good fun.
It is. One more thing. This is always a kind of vague question because who knows what you're doing in the future, but 6-7 years ago was when you sort of stopped being really an active YouTuber. Well into your entrepreneur creator career now, I would definitely call you an entrepreneur before I'd call you a creator. Let's say like 5 years from now, what do you think you're working on? Is it the same businesses and you're just deeper in them? You're deploying a multi-$100 million creator fund for at Creator Ventures. What do you think you're doing in about five years?
I think, I love investing. And so we'll definitely be investing. I don't know if we want to grow a massive fund. I think we'd rather stay small and lean. And like, I think we can compete really well at pre-seed and seed. Obviously, things always evolve and change. But right now, we're loving the space we're in. At Influencer, the goal is to funnel $1 billion within the next 8 years to creators. So hopefully, we've already gotten there. I think also with talent management, I just want to be doing that. I want to be in talent management for the rest of my working career.
Yeah.
Because I think it, again, it, it, they all support each other. So probably won't have started any more businesses and probably just doing very similar things. Hopefully, maybe have some kids. I don't know.
Living a good normal life with a lot of businesses.
Exactly. Maybe I'll have one less by then.
Maybe, hopefully because you've sold it, not because it's failed.
I'll have exited successfully, yeah, not
technically
not like
exited.
I did on YouTube.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, we'll end it right there, Casper. Thank you for coming on. And listener, we'll see you next week. Cheers.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course.